Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today you'll meet a woman who overcame stereotypes and sexism to prove that she could make it in one of the most male-dominated environments ever, the United States Secret Service, and she was stationed at the White House. She was judged by her looks and treated as a blonde bimbo, but quickly gave the powers that be a run for their money. Her book, entitled Talk Back Barbie, the Secret Service Edition, is an amusing and entertaining memoir about that experience. I'm pleased to welcome author Lauren Lusby Fernandez to our show. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored to be on your show with you today.
Lauren, your book makes it clear that you've been fighting stereotypes all your life. I mean, even as a summer intern at a police department, they called you Malibu Barbie. And then, as soon as you started training at the Secret Service, they called you Talkback Barbie. Why do you think you had such a hard time being taken seriously?
I think it's because I was young and naive at the time. So I think, and being blonde didn't help. And I was in this male-dominated environment. Working for the police department obviously was male-dominated. And working for the Secret Service was the same, very male-dominated. And on the surface, I look like your typical blonde Southern debutante, which I was. But they didn't understand that underneath, I was so much more than that. And I think once they got to know me, they realized how tough I was. But a lot of times I've discovered that it's because people judge a book by its cover before getting to know the person and who they are inside. And I've had that problem my whole life, that I have stories from college where I would walk into a room and people would automatically assume that I was mean or I was, you know, this personality or that. And then they got to know me and they realized I was not that type of person at all. And so I think if we can just stop like judging a book by its cover and give a person a chance to prove who they are, I think then the world would just be a much better place.
Why did you want to work for the Secret Service?
It had been my dream since I was 10 to be an FBI agent. So I pursued every goal and outlet to ultimately, hopefully become an FBI agent, which obviously I did not. And when I graduated college, the only two agencies that would allow college students fresh out of college to join them was the Secret Service Uniform Division and the NSA. They had positions for people who were just coming out of college. So I applied to both of those federal agencies. And obviously I did not get in the NSA, which the story's in the book, but I did get through the Secret Service background polygraph, all that. And then I went through 6 months of intense federal law enforcement training that I ended up passing and ended up working for the Secret Service. So it had been my dream since I was a little girl to go be a federal law enforcement officer. And I was set to accomplish that.
So in June 2005, your 3-month training program to be a Secret Service officer began. You described yourself as a girly girl in a manly man's world. Let's talk about how the men treated you. There was a really creepy stalker that made life so difficult for you that you filed a sexual harassment complaint against him and he was kicked out. And then one of your training instructors was sadistically abusive. How did you cope in that environment?
I was very fortunate that I had an amazing support system. I was engaged to my husband at the time, so he was my fiance. My parents were super supportive. I talked to them all the time on the phone, so that they could walk me through and just keep me motivated to keep pushing through and working hard. But to be honest, I never really had dates and stuff in college. So to have a stalker, that really threw me for a loop. I didn't know how to handle that. But I also knew from watching all my CSI shows that I needed to handle him cautiously, because if you make somebody angry and mad, you know that they're just gonna possibly be very revengeful. So I was very kind to him, but it got to be very inappropriate how he treated me and the other girl that was in our class. And so we ended up having to have the guys in my class back us up with evidence to take it to our chief. And they ended up getting him kicked out because he would come to my room. He would bring me jewelry. It was just it was too much. And, you know, that's just what we had to do. And I felt much better once he was out of the class because I was able to relax and enjoy myself. And then with the mean technician, the minute I walked into training, he had it out for me. He did not want me to, he basically looked at me and said, "You are not going to pass training. You are not cut out to be a Secret Service uniform division officer, and I'm going to make sure that happens. And he put me in situations during training that were above and beyond what the other trainees were going through, because he wanted me to fail. And if you didn't pass scenarios during training, you would ultimately fail and you wouldn't graduate, and then you would not be a Secret Service officer. So he put me in situations that were a lot tougher than other people to try to get me to fail, and I ended up passing them. So I utilized that to make me stronger. I used that discrimination to fuel a fire inside me, because I wanted to prove to them, like we talked about before, judging a book by its cover can get you into a lot of trouble, because he didn't know that what he was doing was actually motivating me instead of putting me down.
Well, what fascinates me about your book is that you debunk the common misconception that beautiful women have it easier in life than everybody else. Your experience was exactly the opposite, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I agree. So a lot of people do say that, but I had it very hard because people just judged me negatively. They thought I was a meaner person than I was. They thought I was snobby. And I'm a very down-to-earth, nice person. I love everybody. I'm friendly. I'm outgoing. And I did encounter a lot of situations like that. And I wonder if it was because I was in a male-dominated environment and career the whole time. Maybe that's why my challenges were a little bit tougher. I mean, I've heard that women usually have an easier time in male-dominated environments. But for me, I just had to overcome that stereotype and prove to them that I was a lot tougher than they thought I was.
Well, one of the reasons you got the name Talk Back Barbie is that you stood up for yourself and challenged authority if you were being unfairly treated. Did any of your male colleagues have the guts to stand up for you?
No. No, I was alone. They kind of would whisper to me. They would tell me they supported me and obviously were on my side, but they also would whisper and be like, Lauren, can you please just keep your mouth shut so we don't get in trouble and we don't have to run extra laps and we don't, you know, he's not screaming at us again. But it's just not in my nature. With a title like Talk Back Barbie, you can have that define you negatively or positively. And I let it define me positively. I use that name because I do talk back, and I've always done that since I was a little child. I would get kicked out of classrooms, sent into the hallway because I would talk too much. But I've always been the type of person who's been an outside the box thinker, and I've always stood up for myself. No matter if that put me alone by myself in a corner, I would stand up for myself. And that's what I did during Secret Service training. I didn't let a nickname like Talk Back Barbie put me in a corner. I still stood up for myself, even though I was alone. Nobody else would have a mouth on fire like me.
I'm sorry I wasn't there with you. Not that I ever would have survived, because I would have stood up for you. I know I would have.
Oh, you are so sweet. I appreciate that. And I guess I've just realized in life that if you don't stand up for yourself, then nobody will. And it's kind of when you have a bully, for instance, in school, it's the same thing. And I learned that in school, a lot of times people would try to use words to hurt you or to bring you down. And there's a story that when I was in high school, well, I think it was maybe middle school, somebody just wanted to be mean and they called me a pig. And normally that would make people cry or, you know, run away or whatever. But I turned around and I smiled at them and I said, thank you so much for calling me a pig. I love pigs. They're my favorite animals. I want to have one as a pet one day. I appreciate your compliment. And oh my gosh, that made them just fall on the floor. And they never said a word to me again. They never cut me down. They never said anything, because I turned something, a scenario that was supposed to be demeaning and, you know, very hurtful, into something that they didn't realize I could turn it around positively.
That's amazing. Your book gives a fairly detailed description of the rigorous and sometimes brutal 3-month training program to become a Secret Service uniformed officer. What was the toughest part of the training?
Oh gosh, I don't think there was a toughest part. It was all very, very difficult. You are doing push-ups, sit-ups, 5 a.m. runs. You have to do that to pass. You have to get a qualification. And it was the worst part for me probably was the shooting the guns, because I was around guns when I was a kid, but I wasn't accustomed to shooting them over and over. And when we would shoot guns, it was hours and hours of shooting. I'm talking loading and reloading. Your fingers are bloody and bruised and cut, because if you misshoot, you can get the gun caught on your skin and it can rip your hand open, you know, because you're tired. And so your hands are slipping and they're sweating and it's hot outside. And I think the shooting the guns was probably one of the most grueling of all the training, just because it was so repetitive and just you're just so tired and your hand and you're having to hold this weapon up to aim on the target to and get it accurately, shoot it accurately. And yet your arms are so exhausted and tired from all the physical training that you did in the mat room, from all the push-ups and sit-ups you were doing. And then you're having to hold a gun for hours upon hours. So I think the shooting was pretty intense for me.
I understand they sprayed your face with pepper spray twice. Why?
That's right. So our class was the fortunate class that we got sprayed two times, not just once. Because one of the guys in my class decided to say to our sergeant that it didn't hurt and that that wasn't a big deal. And let me tell you, in Secret Service training, the minute they know that something isn't a big deal or doesn't hurt you as bad as they want it to hurt you, you will be doing it 2, 3, 4, 5 times if you have to. And so they made us come right back out the next day and we were sprayed again with pepper spray. And it was awful. One of the worst experiences. Your face is on fire for hours and hours and hours.
After going through all that horrible training, you got stationed at the White House, but you quit your job after a year and a half. Why?
I was burnt out. Shift work. I was newly married. So I got married while I was working at the White House and with the Secret Service. I was burnt out. The shift work was really hard. The mundane tasks. I was, even though the position was amazing, I was working with the President of the United States, which not many people can say they did, but the task was very boring. I'm a very hyperactive, outgoing person. I need to be around people all the time. And my problem was that the task was too mundane. I was letting people in gates, checking passes, checking them on the computer, checking bags, or sometimes standing in a post all by myself with nothing to do. And so for me, I just got very bored and I didn't enjoy it the same way that I thought I would. And then on top of that, being tired and not being able to go out with all my friends. I was young. I was 23 at the time. So I wanted to go out with my friends, but my scheduling made that very difficult to be able to go and do things socially with my friends. And my days off were in the middle of the week. So when my friends are working, I have time off. So it just made it really hard on a young person who was newly married to have a fun life at that age.
So the obvious question, Lauren, if you had known that you were only going to stay on the job for a year and a half, would you still have gone through that horrible training?
100%. I would not trade it for the world. I came out a completely different person. Now, don't get me wrong. Who I was already deep inside me when I went into training, but accomplishing what I accomplished and proving myself to somebody as discriminatory as the mean technician, I cannot tell you how satisfying it is to know that what I went through and how I proved myself to my team, to my family, to my classmates who never believed I was going to be an FBI agent or a federal law enforcement officer, because I proved myself to all these people, I would never have traded it for the world. I think I would do it again in a heartbeat just to prove that I could do it.
You worked at the White House under President George W. Bush. You met the President and First Lady Laura Bush during the course of your job, but you were not permitted to start a conversation with them. Was it hard to restrain yourself from asking for a selfie with them?
Oh my gosh, all the time. So difficult. But back then I only had a flip phone. So it was a little different than it is now. It'd be probably a little bit easier for me to put my phone over here and get a selfie with the President. But back then, it was a little bit more difficult to do that, and with my mouth, oh my goodness, it was really hard to keep my mouth shut when I wanted to carry on this conversation and ask all these crazy questions. And I had to stand there stoic and just say, you know, good morning, Mr. President, or hello. And to only say one word answers, as we saw in my polygraph test, was very difficult for me, but I had to do it because I had to be professional and that was my job. But man, did I want to take a selfie with them so bad.
I know, and it would have been great for your book.
Oh, it would have been amazing. I would have loved that. I should have just taken a picture of their dogs or something.
By the way, is it true that there are a lot of fence jumpers at the White House?
Yes. Not as many, not one every day, of course, but there are multiple fence jumpers a year, easily. And when that happens, the whole front lawn is on a high alert. So you've got the snipers, You've got all the officers jumping out of their boxes, pulling their weapons, putting them on the fence jumper. And it seems from our experience that most of the fence jumpers had some type of psychological disorder is what we've discovered. Not all of them, but some of them have had psychological disorders where they thought that when they were jumping over the fence, they were coming to give the president intelligence information for his betterment or for the betterment of the country, stuff like that.
Wow. You wrote that being a Secret Service officer was a constant struggle for you because you had to be suspicious and untrusting of every member of the public you encountered, and it's just not your nature. You even got into trouble for doing a good deed for someone who asked you to hold her purse while she went on a White House tour. Do you think you just didn't have the right personality for that kind of job?
You know, looking back, I do agree with that a little bit. I think as much as my passion was in law enforcement, and it still is, I still love law enforcement, I think that my personality is not cut out for it. It was very difficult for me because I'm the type of person who wants to love everybody. And I think that everybody is good at the core until they prove me otherwise. So until you lie to me or until you show me a deceitful side of yourself, I am going to think that you're a good person and I'm going to love you for that. And it's going to be until I see something bad about you that I'll start questioning who you are. But in law enforcement, it's the completely opposite. You need to be distrusting of everybody immediately. Not that they're going to do anything wrong, but they could. They could come up to you and pull a gun, or they could have this child come up to distract you so that this other person's coming over on this side to shoot you or whatever it might be, or kidnap you or knock you out. You have no idea. And especially being in the Secret Service, you're out on foot beats all the time. So you're in the middle of all these tourists and pedestrians outside of the White House. So you do need to be very aware of your surroundings at all times.
Yeah, that was the impression I got when I read the book. I just think you're too sweet and too trusting and you're too sociable to take a job like that.
Way too sociable. I wanted to talk to everybody, but then you get in that position too, where you have all these pedestrians and all they're doing is asking for directions, and I'm directionally challenged, so I knew where nothing was. So you just get annoyed talking to people, which is weird because I like to talk to people all the time, but it's because I didn't want to give them directions.
Because of the very nature of what the Secret Service does, were there some experiences that you could not include in the book?
Of course. I mean, there's stuff that I could not say. I could not say post names and all that kind of stuff. I made up post names because that's all classified information that you only get at training. I didn't use any president's secret names or code names. I didn't use anything like that. I used anything in the book that is in there. I was able to find on the internet and made sure that it was unclassified information that everybody knows about. And I made sure that that's what I put into the book so that that way there's no discretion of something being classified or secret that's in there.
What has your career been like since you left the Secret Service?
Well, I went through a bunch of different jobs. Obviously, a couple of those stories are in the book as well. I went and worked for a law firm for about 4 months, and that was a disaster. And then I went and did government consulting. But my position with government consulting, when I went to go to a different firm, I lost that position and I actually was unemployed. So I started dog walking in my condo and I actually loved it and had a lot of fun doing that. And I was pregnant at the time and had my son when I was doing that. And now I live in Georgia. So we left DC and we moved to Georgia. And now I live in Georgia and I work for an energy company called JRL Coal.
Wow. I loved your definition of a consultant in your book. You said it was someone who tells you what time it is on your watch and then walks off with it.
Exactly. I loved being a consultant. I had normal hours. It was great pay. Again, I was a little bit bored in the position. I was in front of a computer all the time, which is just not who I am as a person. But that is a true description, unfortunately, because they are kind of overpaid government-ish workers. And it was a great career and job at the time. But I also realized that maybe sometimes I'm just cut out for part-time jobs or something that just keeps me busy all the time, doing something different.
One of the many lessons from your book is that if you handle stress the right way, it will make you stronger and more resilient. What advice do you have for people experience the same kind of stress on the job that you had?
Laughter. Laughter is one of the best medicines to just get you out of that funk, to get you out of the stressful situation, but also a really good support system. You need people that you can talk to. You need people that you can confide in, because they are the ones who, they might not want to hear it and they might not pick up your phone call, but you need that support system of people who you can talk to, and you need to alleviate that stress. But also working out. Do so, or if you don't like to work out, go in nature and hike. Do something to get that stress and alleviate that stress, because you need to get through each day, each and every day. And just putting that foot in front of the other one and just knowing that this stress right now is temporary. But if you can laugh through it, if you make some mistakes, laugh through it, learn from it, grow from it. And I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from my book, is just that people might laugh at me at the book, or they might laugh with me, but honestly, I don't care, because I put myself out there to share my stories so that other people can learn and learn to handle stressful situations to the best of their ability through laughter, support system, and just making every day, putting your foot step by step every day and just taking it step by step, basically.
So true. And some research studies show that women handle stressful situations better than men. Was that your experience in the Secret Service?
In training, that is exactly what we experienced during stressful shooting situations. When we were actually timed and it was a test, me and the other girl in my training class, we actually did and tested better than the guys did. But then when we're just standing in the shooting range shooting, we would actually have lower scores than the guys did. And same with mat room training. The minute we were tested and it was a strenuous, stressful situation, it seemed that we would test better than the guys would.
Wow. Well, Lauren, I don't want to give people the impression that all of the difficulties you encountered in your career were at the hands of men. Some of the women you dealt with in your career haven't been that nice to you either, have they?
No, I've had it from both ends. And that's why I've learned to just be my independent, confident self. And if I'm going to sit in a corner by myself, I'm not going to have my nose in the corner. I'm going to be making sure I keep a view on the horizon and see what's out there. But I worked for, like I said earlier, the law firm, and it was a mostly women group that I worked with. And they had it out for me and did not like me and would tell me to my face I was doing a really good job. And behind my back, they were correcting things that I didn't know were wrong, and they were not telling me how to correct it. And so my 3-month evaluation came and it was very bad. And I had to leave the firm because I didn't even know I was making mistakes that I was making. And then when I worked for government consulting, I had a girl who, everybody is always on the computers when they have downtime and they get their work done. And she turned me in to my superior for getting on the internet, looking at DSW website. So I've always had that. So it's just made me more confident in who I am and to stand up for myself, because I'm not going to let other people tell me who I am and put me down for things that I know aren't a big deal and something I know I didn't do wrong.
That's really important. I admire that in you. And it's something that I think everybody should try to emulate. Now, you've heard the old saying that you should dress for success, but doing so in your case often backfired. What advice do you have for women on how to dress appropriately at the office?
Because I came from Secret Service, obviously, and you're in uniform, I was ready to fit the mold of dressing for success. But when I worked for the law firm, my dad took me out and we bought Ann Taylor suits and silk blouses and new heels. But when I went to work for the law firm, even though they were very well dressed, don't get me wrong, everybody was very well dressed, but I was overdressed because I was new and I was just an legal assistant. So for me, it didn't look so good because they thought, oh my gosh, is that girl making too much money as a legal assistant to be able to afford those clothes? And because the other girl I was working with was lower class dressed and she was going to law school at the same time. And so I was dressed like the attorneys were dressed, which I thought was a good thing. But in my role and with being in a women dominated group, it made me actually stand out too much, to where I think that was one of the reasons they did discriminate against me as well. And then in the working for the government consulting firm, when I worked there, I always was working at government sites because of my clearance. And the government sites, the government employees dress way more casual than the government consulting firm that I worked with did. So I had to dress very down from what I normally am used to dressing like. So it was tough for me to learn how to dress. I say just a nice pair of slacks and a collared shirt and some low heels, not super stiletto heels, is one of the best ways I think women nowadays in most environments could dress and not stand out too much, but not look underdressed as well.
You know, you're hitting on a topic that's very unique to women. You don't see this with men because most men wear suits.
Correct.
And yeah, whether the suit cost $1,000 or $500, you don't always really, you can't tell that.
Exactly.
But what you're talking about is really discrimination if people think you might be rich or that you're dressing too flashy.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I had to, again, I was young, I was inexperienced. I didn't know. My dad just always told me, dress for success. That's what you do. You go full out, you look your best. And I've always done that. Obviously, I was a Georgia debutante. I know what it is to dress your best and how you're supposed to dress in all these occasions. But I do think over the years, dressing has become very much more casual nowadays than it was way back then. And my dad still is very old school. So for him, he'll say dress for success now. And I'm telling him, Dad, I think we need to tone it down a little bit because that's too much. It's over the top. And I don't want to stand out. Sometimes I think with my blonde hair, I already stand out. So that's why I've learned to kind of dress for my looks. So I dress down a little bit more so that I don't stand out in the crowd too much, so that I can blend in instead of standing out, if that makes sense.
So you shouldn't dress like you're going to a cocktail party.
Right, exactly. So I try not to dress like I'm going to a cocktail party unless the event, you know, we need to dress like that. But I try not to stand out too much because I've learned in my past and with obviously the stories in my book that no matter what I did, I was always standing out in some fashion or form, whether it was for my mouth or for the way I was dressed. And so I decided that it was better to just dress moderately instead of over the top.
You know, Lauren, your book is kind of like a cross between the movie Private Benjamin, starring Goldie Hawn, with a touch of Legally Blonde thrown in. Would you like to see the book turned into a movie or maybe a TV series?
Oh, I would love to see that happen. When I describe it to people, I tell people it's like Miss Congeniality meets Legally Blonde, but they're in the Secret Service. And the vibe of the book just has so much potential to be a really good family-friendly film or Netflix series or Amazon Prime series. And it's funny. And it's about learning about yourself and just growing, but also adding comedy to a very, very serious career. Working for the Secret Service isn't a joke, but for me, it kind of was because I encountered so many funny, difficult situations that I laughed at and I wanted to write about and share that, you know what, you can be in a stressful situation and you can be discriminated against, but you can laugh through it and you can learn through it and you can grow through it. And to me, that's the most important part about Talk Back Barbie, is that I took a serious career and I turned it into a bunch of fun and laughter, but there are a lot of good takeaways from the book as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, really, what's the major lesson you want to convey to people, and especially women, from your experience at the Secret Service? Although I do think there are lessons for men in that book, too.
Listen, 100%. People think the book is for women only, and that is not true. This book is for men, women, teenagers who are looking to go into different careers. There's no doubt that the book is for anyone and everyone. But I think the biggest takeaway from the book is to don't let other people define who you are as a person. You define who you are. And you are the only person who can be successful or fail. You are the only one who has control over what success you do in your life and what failures you do in your life. And I think that's the biggest part of the book takeaway, is that if you let the world define who you are, then you're not going to be who you're meant to be. But if you define who you are and you take the world by its horns and you go and you fight for everything that you believe you can do, I think that that is the most motivating thing about Talk Back Barbie, is that you fight for what you think and know you can accomplish in life.
I so believe in that. And I think it's such a great message. And I want to thank you so much for writing the book. I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed having you on our show to talk about it. Thank you so much for being here, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having me. I have really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, I have two. Our guest has been author Lauren Lesbi Fernandez, author of Talk Back Barbie, the Secret Service Edition. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to our producer, Steve Silver. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Be sure to check out more interviews by Harvey Brownstone on this podcast channel.